we're the Denver Broncos cheerleaders, and you're listening to Sports Crunch with DeGrom.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever or whatever you cats and kittens are. This is Sports Crunch with DeGrom. I'm your host, David Cromwell. It's Good Friday, pro days are almost over, and we are less than 4 weeks away from the 2024 NFL Draft. Shortly after Easter Sunday, NFL front offices will begin putting the final touches on their draft boards. In that spirit, it is time to begin our annual Dash to the Draft Divisional Tour. Our first stop is the NFC South, which has been the NFL's weakest division for the past two seasons. What do the Panthers, Falcons, Saints, and Bucks need to do in the draft in order to take their level of play to a substantially higher level? Joining us to help answer that question and more is our good friend Scott Kennedy, who is the host of the Falcons podcast on YouTube, one that he co-hosts with our good friend Nick Kendall. Welcome back to the program, Scott. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me.
We appreciate you donating your time and your football mind to this program as well, Scott. And without further ado, let's get down to business. The NFC South is home to the team that is arguably the biggest laughingstock in the National Football League right now, the Carolina Panthers. Last year, they traded the farm to move all the way up to the top pick and take Bryce Young, a quarterback that the owner, not the coaches, the owner wanted. And it turned out to be a catastrophic mistake as Bryce Young didn't have a chance behind a sivish offensive line and throwing to wide receivers who couldn't separate to save their lives. And even worse, the 2024 first-round pick they traded to the Bears ended up being the first overall pick, which the Bears are all but certain to use on Caleb Williams. In addition, a year after passing on an offer from the Rams that would have given the Panthers two firsts in exchange for star pass rusher Brian Burns, Carolina botched subsequent contract negotiations with Burns and were forced to tag and trade him to the Giants for a 2-5. Things have gotten so bad for the Panthers that country music star and diehard Panthers fan Luke Combs sent a post on X bashing the team. With their moves in recent weeks, however, new general manager Dan Morgan and head coach Dave Canales have prioritized doing whatever it takes to help Bryce Young succeed. They signed two notable guards in free agency for a total of $153 million and also traded for Steelers wide receiver Deontay Johnson. So my question here, Scott, is should the Panthers spend both of their second-round picks, 33 and 39, on further upgrading the supporting cast for Bryce Young, or should they spend one of those picks on beefing up the Brian Burns-less pass rush?
Well, I think it's going to be awfully hard to replace Brian Burns, period, let alone in the second round. An edge rusher is going to be tough get in the second round. Now, could you package a couple of those together, 33 and 39, and get into the back end of the first? And maybe get a Leatu Latu or a Chop Robinson, possibly. But I still think, as you noted, I think they're better off trying to help out the big investment they put into Bryce Young or whoever ends up being quarterback if Bryce Young doesn't work out, because it is a deep wide receiver draft. And I could get a couple of pretty darn good wide receivers at the top end of the second round.
Oh, you most certainly can. And also with the Panthers, I'm looking at their offensive line. Yes, they beefed up the interior with those two guards, Robert Hunt and Damian Lewis, which is very good. But Ike Ekwonu has not panned out in pass protection at tackle. And Taylor Moten is far more of a road grader than a pass protector. You need to improve that pass protection. So don't you think the Panthers should be behooved to find a potential offensive line upgrade with one of those two second-round picks?
You wonder, I don't know if the offensive tackles are going to be there in the second round where you look at the type of value that you can get. So, you know, I think you can also look at, you know, maybe the idea of getting a Roger Rosengarten in the later rounds or a Patrick Paul out of Houston, someone in that neighborhood, where you could really get a couple of guys that should have first round grades in most drafts at the wide receiver. So for me, it's wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers.
That makes a lot of sense. And now on to the team you root for and cover for a living, the Atlanta Falcons. When it comes to your Falcons, they have a rather intriguing decision with the eighth overall pick, Scott. In recent weeks, they landed free agency's biggest fish and quarterback Kirk Cousins and gave him two more weapons and wide receivers Darnell Mooney and Rondale Moore to go along with Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson. Most around the NFL expect the Falcons to fill their biggest need at edge with Alabama's Dallas Turner. However, given the massive investment they just made in Kirk Cousins with that four-year, $180 million contract that includes $100 million guaranteed. Do you get the feeling the Falcons will choose to either upgrade the offensive line by taking one of the top three tackles or select one of wide receivers Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers if they're available?
Well, that's you mentioned there's a lot of good options there. And with the league going quarterback crazy, there's three big wide receivers in the class. There are four quarterbacks that could go in the top seven. So there's seven right there. If all of those guys move up, someone's got to come down. And Joe Alt, offensive tackle, could end up being the best prospect on the board. Upgrading the offensive line, it would not necessarily be a priority. The Atlanta Falcons offensive line has been pretty good. And you mentioned the team I root for. Yeah, that's Chelsea Football Club.
My bad.
So, but it is a bit of a sneaky need because Jake Matthews is getting older and Caleb McGarry could be a liability in a more pass-oriented scheme. But it'll be hard for me to pass on an edge in this class because they are available. And they haven't been available at 4, 8, and 8 in the last three drafts where, you know, Micah Parsons wasn't really an edge coming out. In a redraft, he goes for sure with that 2021 pick. So if one of those guys falls, maybe. But if one of those guys falls, maybe someone wants to move up for him as well. And a small trade back where you could pick up another second round pick and get one of your edges like Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Leiatu Latu. And again, another second round makes a lot of sense to me. And if for some reason those guys are all gone, another corner opposite A.J. Terrell is actually a pretty big need for this team as well.
Yeah, new head coach Raheem Morris would definitely like to upgrade that defense that showed a lot of promise last year. And now on to the New Orleans Saints, where 2024 is a make-or-break season for head coach Dennis Allen. And the Saints desperately, and I mean desperately, need an offensive tackle. Pro Bowl right tackle Ryan Ramczyk may be on the last legs of his career due to a cartilage defect in his knee, and the Trevor Penning experiment at left tackle has been an absolute flop. But if the Saints want one of those top three tackles in this draft, Joe Alt, Olufashinu, or Talisi Fuaga, they may have to trade up a few spots. In your opinion, Scott, is it better for the Saints to trade up for one of those aforementioned tackles or stay put at 14 and take someone in that next year like Troy Fautanu, J.C. Latham, or even Amarius Mims?
That's a great question. It's a deep draft for offensive tackles, so I wouldn't necessarily want them to move up when I can get maybe an Amarius. I could probably get Amarius Mims at 14 out of the University of Georgia, and he's just oozing with upside as somebody. You know, J.C. Latham out of Alabama, Graham Barton possibly out of Duke. I almost want to say I've got three, four guys that are still there. I almost want to say move back a little bit. If anybody could use some cost-controlled players, it's the New Orleans Saints and extra draft picks and try and reset that cap that they are constantly just kicking down the road. But yes, offensive tackle in a deep offensive tackle class might say to me, stay at 14, grab whoever you like best out of that bunch, or if there's several of them you like, if there's three or four of them you like, maybe I could get a smaller trade back with the Colts, the Seahawks, the Jaguars, Bengals, someone in that neighborhood. Get my offensive tackle anyway and pick up another day two pick would be a pretty good idea for the Saints as well.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. The Saints should have abandoned this cap gymnastics after Drew Brees retired. And the fact they're still doing it is only going to set them back even further. And now on to the Bucs. Not only are they coming off their third consecutive NFC South crown, they were able to keep pretty much their entire core intact this spring by re-signing Mike Evans, Baker Mayfield, Levante David, etc. And when you look at Tampa's roster, there's only two glaring needs. Corner, especially after trading away Carlton Davis, and edge with Joe Tryon Choike and Yaya Diaby at the top of the depth chart at the moment. If the corner and edge cupboards are bare from a value perspective when pick 26 rolls around, what would the best move be for Tampa?
Yeah, they could use just good players. You know, they surprised a lot of people last year, and it helps that they were playing in the NFC South. I don't think anybody expected them to be as competitive as they were, even in a watered-down division. Again, they haven't made many additions to this point, so you know, they could use a couple of players. They could use get younger on the offensive line as well. And if one of those top guys falls, you know, I do mock drafts constantly, and all of a sudden Byron Murphy just shows up there for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Despite your needs, you don't pass on a guy like Byron Murphy if he ends up being available. I have trouble with corner out of the first couple of guys. I really do, finding the guys that I really like in the first round. So, I mean, I hate to say it, but at 26, I almost say, don't worry so much about need and just go with the guy who you think is the best fit, the best player, the best prospect available for your team. And that could be any one of the positions. You know, if a Donnie Mitchell comes in there, you know, if Xavier Worthy, the wide receivers out of Texas, the super fast guy, if they're available, I might go that direction. If I'm looking at a slight trade up, I might go Chop Robinson. You're probably hoping that he falls to that spot to fit a need with the best prospect available, but I don't know if he's going to be there at 26.
Oh, you bring up a very good point, Scott, because last year with the 19th overall pick, the Bucs took their absolute best player on the board, even though it wasn't necessarily a glaring need, in Kalijah Kansi. Now look what he's done. He has made that defensive front even more dangerous. So Jason Light might as well operate the same way this year as he did last year.
Yeah, you can never go wrong taking 300-pounders that can play. That's not a bad way to go. There's an old saying in the NBA, old now, that probably doesn't happen as much anymore, but if you're going to miss on a seven-footer. So I feel like that about the draft. So I'm going to miss. I'm either going to miss on a guy that runs a 4.3 or a 300-pounder that can move. And those guys are usually going to end up being pretty good.
He is Scott Kennedy, ladies and gentlemen, the co-host of the Falcons podcast on YouTube. You can follow him on X at Scout Kennedy. And Scott, it's now time for the best portion of our Dash of the Draft Divisional Tour, a three-round mock draft for all four teams in the NFC South, but no trades are allowed. And we start with the Panthers, who are on the clock with the 33rd overall pick. Ladd McConkey is the top wide receiver on the board, but they did release Bradley Bozeman, their center, and Zach Frazier is on the board as well. So which one of those two do you pick?
I'll take Ladd McConkey for that group.
Absolutely. Ladd McConkey, his play style is very similar to that of Adam Thielen, and him getting to learn from Adam Thielen for a year would be very helpful. And plus, he's the perfect receiver for Bryce Young. He's a route-running maven, and Bryce Young is the ultimate timing and rhythm passer. The Panthers would be doing backflips if Ladd McConkey's still available at 33 overall. And now 39 overall. Zach Frazier, we just mentioned. Chris Braswell is the top edge on the board from Alabama. Jordan Morgan, if you think you could play tackle, you could take him. And Roman Wilson, if you want your deep threat, you could take Roman Wilson or even Ricky Pearsall, although I think his play style is very similar to that of McConkey. So if you want a double-dip receiver, Roman Wilson would probably make the most sense here. What do you think?
We mentioned that on the top of the board. I could probably get a couple of wide receivers in the second that could end up playing like first-round guys. I don't mind double-dipping at wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers in the second round. There are guys that can flat out play. And you just mentioned a bunch of them. Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, and Roman Wilson, two of those. If I come out of the draft, if I need a couple of receivers and I come out of the draft with those two, I'm pretty damn happy for the Carolina Panthers.
Likewise, Roman Wilson is the pick at 39 overall, and we're back on the clock at 65 overall in the third round. And Jonah Ellis, an edge out of Utah, is the top player on the board. But Jonathan Brooks out of Texas, he may be coming off an ACL tear, but his medicals at the combine reportedly came out good, according to our good friend Jeff Barnes at Team NBS Media. And the Panthers overpaid for Miles Sanders, and they could afford to get cheaper at that position. And Jonathan Brooks running behind a road rating offensive line, I think that would tremendously benefit Bryce Young. Plus, Dave Canales wants to run the ball a lot this year.
Yeah, I'm getting to the point now where I grew up when running backs were cool, you know, and now it's like, okay, I can just plug in anybody. I'd feel like with this team, I could probably use that pick somewhere else. I don't know if I want to go Brooks in that area. Who else is still on the board?
Jaden Hicks, safety out of Washington State. Junior Colson, linebacker out of Michigan. Kyrie Jackson, a corner from Oregon. Tez Walker out of North Carolina, if you want to do a hat trick at wide receiver. Javon Baker, Blake Corb, Austin Booker, another edge is there. Gabriel Murphy, another pretty talented edge is available as well.
I might go Austin Booker in this one, but you could probably talk me into Jonathan Brooks, but I wouldn't necessarily want to go there. But if I'm the Carolina Panthers and I need wide receivers, as we said, you just mentioned three wide receivers I still like. So maybe I hedge my bets earlier and look down and say, okay, in my third, I might be able to get one of those guys. Javon Baker would be a great pick out of UCF. I don't know if you said if Johnny Wilson was still available out of FSU, but that guy's a freak of nature. He's 6'6 and change, 240 pounds, running in the 4.5s and can bend. So that would be good value in the fourth round. So, you know, lots of good choices there. If I need a cornerback, I might see if Max Melton is still on the board. Might be a good target in that area. That might not be a bad way to go. If I'm, I like Max Melton, third round. If I need a corner from Carolina, that might be where I go there.
Yeah, like the Panthers definitely could afford to trade down in a situation like this. But since no trades are allowed, they take Rutgers corner Max Melton to conclude this three-round mock. And now on to your Falcons. And look who is staring you in the face at the eighth overall pick. And this is not going to happen on draft night, folks. It just is not. Marvin Harrison Jr. looking at you in the face. And Brock Bowers as well, though you don't need him because you got a Kyle Pitts.
You're
already
done. You have me at Marvin Harrison. It's one of those where I don't necessarily want the wide receiver, but I can certainly justify taking Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, or Marvin Harrison. And again, I don't think it's going to be him, but you've got really eight premier prospects on offense. Someone's going to be there at eight, including, you know, of Joe Alt, one of the quarterbacks, one of the receivers. I think the Falcons probably hope it's one of the quarterbacks because that would be their best trade down opportunity. But you put Marvin Harrison on the board, I'm taking him. So who went in his spot?
Who went in Marvin Harrison Jr.'s
was
spot?
Was it Joe Alt that then elevated into the top seven?
Yeah, Joe Alt was taken in the top four.
Yep, four quarterbacks, two receivers, and Joe Alt, leaving Marvin Harrison there.
Yep, Nabers went to five, and Rome Odunze went seven in this mock. So Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, I'm running up and handing him the board. And then I would start saying, well, it hurt him because he didn't work out at the combine, didn't work out at the pro day, so he fell to eight, and the Falcons are happy. Drake London didn't work out at the combine. Drake London didn't run at the pro day, so they don't mind that so much.
No, they don't, nor should they. And now the Falcons are back on the clock at 43 overall, and one of my absolute favorite players in this draft is still left on the board. Michigan corner, Mike Saberstill. Mike Saberstill is primarily a slot corner, but he can play the boundary on occasion. As our good friend Bill Carroll told us last week, and Raheem Morris, he's known for his work with defensive backs. He would love a guy like Mike Saberstill in his defensive room.
Falcons are pretty good at the slot corner position, so, you know, unless I feel good about him playing outside, I need a cornerback too out of this group, and I have a feeling they might try and address that in free agency. It's also possible that they, if they could trade down and get Terrion Arnold early or Nate Wiggins early, and then use whatever they get to trade back up to get maybe Laiatu Latu or Chop Robinson at the back end of the second, but they want to come out of this with edge and corner would be spectacular. And then it's hard for them to picture not coming out of this with a wide receiver as deep a class is. I don't know as much about the Michigan corner, so I want to know who else is out there on the board.
Chris Braswell is the highest ranked edge on the board.
No, I'm not a huge fan of him at edge.
Braden Fisk, defensive.
And that's where I end up going. I can tell you're using the PFF mock draft simulator because I've done it enough to know who's available there. And this morning I went Braden Fisk, inside, outside versatility. Great get off, improves a pass rush on third down situations inside. You're going to need to get a little bit younger at that position because Grady Jarrett and David Onyemata are both in their 30s. So I like Braden Fisk in this spot.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad pick at all. Grady Jarrett is indeed getting a little long in the tooth. And we're back on the clock at 74 overall. And you got Devontez Walker out of North Carolina is the highest rated non-quarterback on the board. Tavondre Sweat, if you want to upgrade your run defense with a heavy nose tackle.
If I hadn't gone Braden Fisk, I might go Tavondre Sweat in this spot, and I might do it anyway because I just said I might need two guys. Tavondre Sweat might be too good to pass up in this spot. 360 pounds of man mountain. Get your own Vita Vea type, who the Falcons have battled in Tampa Bay for a long time.
That would be a very good pick, but what about Javon Baker? Because keep in mind, Darnell Mooney is essentially a nine-route specialist and nothing else, and Rondale Moore is only in Atlanta on a one-year deal.
Yep, I could go with Javon Baker in that spot too at wide receiver. But again, I feel decent about the Atlanta Falcons offense. I need to start thinking long term on defense. So you know what? I'm going to double up here, and I'm going to go since I didn't get my edge in the first. I'm going to double up on the interior because I don't know how many edges out there that I really like, and I'd be okay with taking Tavondre Sweat and Braden Fisk in rounds two and three. I've got my ready-made replacements and a hell of a rotation for the 30-plus-year-olds Grady Jarrett coming off of a knee injury and David Onyemata.
Absolutely, and Raheem Morris would probably approve of what you have just done. And now on to the Saints. We're out of the clock at 14 overall. The top three tackles are gone, and the best tackle left on the board is Troy Faletau of Washington. And I would love Troy Faletau here for the Saints for several reasons. One, as our friend Joey Richards said on our offensive line special, Faletau can play either tackle or guard. And if you needed to play tackle, just slide him right in at tackle. And he has five position versatility, so he will allow the Saints to put their absolute best five offensive linemen on the field, no matter the circumstance. So Faletau is the guy I'm eyeing here, unless you like Brock Bowers.
No, Brock Bowers could end up being the best player in this draft, but you know the tight end situation, you lose the positional value of his contract, of his rookie contract, immediately after you draft him. So, and again, your tight end doesn't matter if you can't protect the passer. So, yes, offensive tackle makes a lot of sense here.
Yeah, so Faletau the pick here?
Sounds good.
Yep, Troy Faletau, the pick for the Saints at 14. And now on to the 45th overall pick, which is the pick the Saints got in the Sean Payton trade from the Broncos. Their original 2024 second is with the Eagles. After that, a peculiar trade they made in 2022. And Tyler Newbin is the best player on the board. If you want to upgrade safety long-term, Honey Badger is getting long in the tooth. He could be a good pick here. But the defensive line could be a very good investment. We can't give him Braden Fisk because we gave him to the Falcons. Adisa Isaac out of Penn State. I think he would be a great cog in the rotation for year one and then be groomed to replace Cameron Jordan after 2024, plus Chase Young. They just signed him, but he's only there on a one-year deal, and he has a neck issue.
Yeah, not bad on the defensive side of the ball. At wide receiver, who are my top wide receivers available? Because I know I'm getting value there, and I think Ricky Pearsall is probably there.
Ricky Pearsall is there, and the Saints absolutely could use another wide receiver to go along with Chris Olave.
Go ahead and hit that draft button on Ricky Pearsall.
Ricky Pearsall, the pick for the Saints at 45, and that concludes the Saints' three-round mock. And now, last but not least, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I haven't started this mock yet, forgive me, but now we're on the clock at 26. And Nate Wiggins is still on the board at 26. Nate Wiggins, he might be small in terms of weight, and he might not have the longest arms, but boy, is he fast. And he is the corner you need to contend with the speed of today's NFL. I don't think Todd Bowles would mind Nate Wiggins here.
Yeah, I'm not worried about need. I don't know how big a need corner is. You know, just looking at what PFF thinks, it's down the line a little bit, but that doesn't mean they're right. Nate Wiggins falls to 26. I'm probably hitting that button too.
Yeah, Nate Wiggins, the pick for the Bucs at 26 to start off this three-round mock, and now we're back on the clock at 57. Michael Penix Jr. is still on the board, and keep in mind, Baker Mayfield, the contract he signed, I think the Bucs could get out of that after 2 years in case he regresses to the mean, and it doesn't hurt to have another quarterback waiting in the wings, but I still do not see the Bucs going with Michael Penix here. Adisa Isaac is still on the board, and they need edge help.
I don't mind the Michael Penix pick because it comes out fairly neutral. You know, they could actually get out of Baker Mayfield's contract next year, save just a little bit of money. They take a decent dead cap hit, but it would be about even. So, you know, a $36 million against a $33 million dead cap, they save $2 million by moving on. Get a redshirt year for Michael Penix, and that's not a bad idea, David. I could live with that one.
Oh, so Michael Penix Jr., the pick for the Bucs at 57?
Be okay with me.
Then Michael Penix Jr. it is for the Bucs at 57, a potential quarterback of the future in case Baker Mayfield doesn't work out in the long run. And the Bucs are back on the clock with their first of two third-round picks. They got another third from the Lions in the Carlton Davis trade. This is their original third. And Trey Benson, a running back out of Florida State, is the best player on the board. And Jason Light is known for taking BPAs. And Rachaad White is very good, but he could use a running mate in that backfield.
Just switch that over to tight end and tell me what you see.
Let's see who's available at tight end. Eric All out of Iowa. Nick Martin, who was our guest for our wide receiver tight end special, he thinks Eric All, if it weren't for the injuries, is the second best tight end in the class behind only Brock Bowers. And he sees some potential George Kittle upside in him. Are you ready to take a flyer on somebody with injury red flags this late in the third?
No, and you know, I do my co-hosting on most of my podcasts with Nick Kendall, who is an Iowa alum, and he's on Eric All. So I'm listening to Nick Kendall on this one. He doesn't necessarily want to go that direction. If we were to go in the fourth, I don't think Theo Johnson lasts that long. That's the guy I'm actually targeting in this area. Now, if you're looking at PFF and you draft Theo Johnson in the third round, even with two picks, but he is a 6'6", 260-pound guy, running 4.5s with a 40-inch vertical leap with a 7.13 cone.
And a 10 RAS score, a perfect RAS score, I believe.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. A huge athlete, caught the ball well at the Senior Bowl. If I'm Tampa Bay Buccaneers and I need a tight end, I'm taking Theo Johnson in the third round.
Yes, it wouldn't shock me at all if he goes in the third round due to his freakish, and I mean freakish, athleticism. And last but not least, 92 overall, the pick they got from the Lions in the Carlton Davis trade. Trey Benson is still here. You want to pair him up with Rachaad White in the backfield? You did franchise tag Antoine Winfield Jr., but in case things don't go well in negotiations there, Cameron Kitchens out of Miami is left on the board. Patrick Paul out of Houston, if you're not sold.
That's the guy I like here. If I'm not worrying about needs and I'm just looking at positional value and prospects, Patrick Paul out of Houston is the guy I really like as a developmental tackle. Again, Tampa could stand to get a little younger, and you can never have too many 300-pounders that can play. I like Patrick Paul in this spot.
And he is Scott Kennedy, ladies and gentlemen, the co-host of the Falcons Podcast on YouTube. You can follow him on X at Scout Kennedy. Scott, thank you so much once again for joining us. And that's it for today here on Sports Crunch. But our annual 2024 Dash to the Draft Divisional Tour continues in just a few days with a stop in the NFC West, where we will meet our good friend Maddie Brown across the pond. So stay tuned. Also, be sure to follow me on X at DCrom59 and on Instagram and now Threads at SportsCrunch with DCrom. And remember, that's Crunch with a K. For Scott Kennedy, this is David Cromwell saying so long, and whatever you do, please choose love, please choose kindness, please choose compassion, please choose selflessness, and please choose empathy, which are the core characteristics of the best teammates and teams in any sport. Until next time, cats, kittens, stay cool.